Hello, this is Robert Rickover at alexanderaudio.com, and today I'm going to be talking to William Conable, who is an Alexander teacher in Columbus, Ohio. He's a professor of music and cello at Ohio State University. He's been running an Alexander course there at the university for 36 years. William will be retiring from that job in the middle of 2008, when he will be relocating to Spokane, Washington. At that point, actually, if you don't mind, William, I'm going to call you Bill. Is that okay?
I wish you would.
Welcome to the program, and.
Thank you.
And Bill is best known in the Alexander world for his work in body mapping. He's the co-author of the book How to Learn the Alexander Technique, a manual for students. And I think I got the title right on that.
That's right.
And he, I'm gonna begin, Bill, by asking you just how you got interested in the technique and what motivated you to devote all these years to studying and teaching it.
I first heard about the technique when I was a little boy. My dad read The Use of the Self. He learned about it from a magazine, and told me much later that he had used it to cure a persistent crick in his back. But he brought it up at the dinner table, and we said, oh, what's that about? And he said, this is a man who has a way of changing habits, which I thought was, looking back at it in retrospect, I thought that was very insightful of my dad. He really got the point about what may be one of the core things that Alexander's discoveries are good for. I was a kid who was at the top of my class academically and the very bottom of it in terms of athletic ability. And the people who go into physical education are, of course, the people who are already good at athletic stuff. So they have no particular way of understanding the experience of a kid who is not naturally well coordinated. So the physical education people at my schools were really no help to me in helping me learn to use myself well to do physical things. So that was always a kind of a burr under my saddle. When I was growing up, I went to the University of Illinois, and when I was a sophomore, my cello teacher, Peter Farrell, went to Lincoln, Nebraska to study the Alexander technique with Marjorie Barstow. And he was actually one of the first people from outside of Lincoln to find Marge and go study with her in many, many years. She had essentially retired from Alexander teaching when she left Boston. So Peter went there and studied with her for the spring semester, and he came back to Illinois, and I said, should I do this? I didn't have any summer plans. And he said, Bill, if you learn what this woman has to teach, you'll never need another cello lesson, which was not true. but it's the way Peter talked, and so I said, well, that sounds pretty good to me, because, well, just not I already knew how he talked, but it did sound pretty interesting. So I did. I went out to Lincoln in the summer of 1962, stayed at the YMCA just the way he had done, and had a lesson every day with Marjorie Barstow, and it was clear to me almost immediately that there was the person who knew what it was that I wanted to know. That, mm-hmm. she could help me with an issue that had been bothering me for, all my life, really.
Right.
So that was a wonderful summer for me. It was very exciting. And Then she came to the University of Illinois the next year to do some workshops, and it became clear to me that I really wanted to know all I could find out about this, and that I wanted to learn how to teach it. That was clear to me even back then. And at that time, Marge told me, well, what I'd like to see you do is go to Boston and study with Frank Jones. So there was a place I could go to graduate school in Boston, Boston University, and I went there primarily because Boston was where Frank was. And so I studied all the time I was doing my graduate work in cello. I also studied Alexander with Frank Jones at Tufts, and that was a very big influence for me too. And then later on, I went back and studied with Marge and started teaching at OSU, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. I think your early experience with Marge matches that of in some ways a lot of other people who came out to Lincoln and found their lives turned around by the experience.
Well, I think that's true, and that actually happened to me twice, because that happened. I went to Frank. I went briefly to London to study. Mm-hmm. I came back, finished my degree, and started teaching it in the university. And one day, out of a clear blue sky, Marjorie called me up on the telephone. I just said, "This is Marjorie Barstow. Do you remember me?" And I said, "Of course I remember you." And she was visiting friends, 30 miles away from where I was teaching. And so she came over to lunch, and after lunch, she said, "Well, would you like a lesson?" And we said, "Of course." And she gave us a lesson. And Barbara and I looked at each other and said, "Oh, this mm-hmm. is the person who knows what we want to know." I mean, but that's the second time I had that experience. And that after that, I just spent all the time with Marge I could for many, many years. We went out to Lincoln in the summer, and we went out to Lincoln in the winter, and we just spent all the time we could with her for almost 20 years, I think.
Right. So at some point, you began whatever the beginnings of body mapping were, and I wonder if you could say how that happened, and how did that whole process of your interest in body mapping develop, and perhaps you might want to define body mapping for someone who isn't totally doesn't know about it.
Sure. Body mapping is about how the way we conceive of our bodies in our thinking, that is, the way we map them for ourselves in every sense of the word mapping, affects our experience of them and affects the way we can move them. And it's an idea that's prefigured quite clearly by Alexander himself. There are some things that I've read in recent years where people have, made notes about his lessons or aphorisms that he said, so forth, that make it clear to me that he was onto something very close to this. And there was one in particular that I've racked my brains and searched my library, and I can't find it again. And then Marge said things all along that kind of prefigured it too. For instance, Marge would say, "You think your shoulder is here, but it's really here instead." And then she would help us move it where the joint really was, and we would say, "Oh, right, it's really there. I thought it was somewhere else." So she was working with that. Now, she didn't want to talk about it. Anybody who studied with Marge knows that she would always say, I just know about only two things, whole heads and whole bodies. And she really did not want people to get bogged down in the details of how their bodies work, because she thought that it carried the danger of losing track of the simplicity of the primary control and the head-neck head-body relationship. And I can certainly respect that. But it does no good to say, I wish my neck to be free and my head to go forward and up, if you don't know where the head is and where the neck is and what's the difference between them.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience is still after, 45 years experience with the Alexander technique, that people don't know what head means and what body means and what neck means and how they all relate to each other. But they think they know.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they say to themselves, I wish my neck to be free and my head to go forward and up, they do so with their idea of what the head is and their idea of what the neck is and their, and that is with their maps of those things. And if those maps aren't accurate, then they're going to get into big trouble, when they always do. Let me carry that illustration one step further. When you look in the mirror at yourself head on, everybody knows where the top of their head is. And if you look at your face, it looks like the bottom of your head is at the level of the bottom of your chin. And if you mentally project that on back, straight back, then you've got a head the shape of a potato that actually includes three or four neck vertebrae.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if you think that that's where your head neck joint is, then you're going to be seriously off, because A, you're going to be trying to free a joint that exists but is not the head neck joint. And B, you're going to be trying to solidify, because it's part of the head and it darn well better not move, a whole big chunk of your neck, which must move in order for you to successfully free your neck and let your head go forward and up. So that kind of confusion is liable to distort and mess up the simplest, most basic Alexander orders.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, let me go back to the question of how did this idea come into really into full bloom in my mind. And I've written this up, actually. It's in our book, How to Learn the Alexander Technique. So I had this kind of experience with Marge in my head, in my experience. But one day, one of my colleagues brought me in to work with a girl a violinist who couldn't bend her elbow. And when she bowed the violin, it was her right arm, and I looked at her, and lo and behold, it was true. She just wasn't bending that elbow when she played the violin. And I said to myself, what would I have to think in order to move like that? Because, from your own experience, Marge always said the Alexander technique is about thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very profound realization on her part. So what would I have to think in order to move the way she's moving, this girl? And I said to her, well, how old were you when you started to play the violin? She said, I was 9. And I said, okay, when you were 9, your elbow was here. And I sort of point to a place about 2.5 inches up from her current elbow joint, where it must have been when she was 9. And she said, yeah. And I said, but look, right now it's really here. It's down here. And I showed her where her elbow joint really was. And she bent it and said, oh, so it is. Well, I can do that. And then she started to play the violin and her bending her elbow.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of the story for her.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, oh, I see.
My
map was wrong. I was trying to move according to the wrong map. It didn't work. I corrected my map. She didn't think it through like this, but that's what was going on. Corrected my map. Now it makes perfect sense to bend at the elbow. And for her, as I say, that was the end of the story. But for me, it was a sort of a one of those eureka moments, because I said, oh, I wonder if there are other things like that. And that was just, and obviously there were thousands other things just like that in my own map, in my students' maps, in my colleagues' maps. We all just sort of went crazy, sort of saying, oh, but wait, you know. And each time we found a mapping error like that and corrected it, the Alexander teaching got clearer, simpler, and much more successful.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been my experience ever since. This was in the early to mid-70s. And I've been working on it ever since, and we've written about it in the book, and other people have written it about it in other books. And the exciting thing is that I can sit here today and tell you that in, you wouldn't think this was true after all these years of, you know, 30 years of working with the ideas and writing about them and thinking about them and teaching about them, I still am learning crucial things about body mapping, including about my own body map.
Mm-hmm.
I've just learned a big one, which is not written about in our books, and I don't know if anybody has thought about it. So here it is being published for the first time.
Okay.
People, in numbers of ways, try to support their head with their larynx and trachea, as if the larynx and trachea were the spine.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it in different ways. Sometimes they think the larynx and trachea, not consciously, but in the map, sometimes they have the larynx and trachea mapped as being the spine. Sometimes they have them mapped as being in some way welded to the spine or identical with the spine. Sometimes they, and this was my own particular confusion, sometimes they try to bind them to the spine for extra support.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Each little variation of this has different symptoms. People who identify that thing that you can see sticking out on the front of your throat as the spine pull their heads forward and down in order to balance their heads on what they think is the spine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely.
And when you clear that up, it just has remarkable effects. And we're right at the very core of the Alexander technique.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to get to that relationship between body mapping and the Alexander technique.
That's where I want. I'd like to too, because there are people now who have kind of split body mapping off from the Alexander technique.
Yes,
and some of them are people that I like and respect a lot, and I wish them well. But I don't, I'm not part of that, and I don't want to be part of that, because to me, the Alexander technique itself is so important, and that I don't want to lose track of it. And I think body mapping is most useful as an aspect of teaching Alexander. And I think that just as you can't learn Alexander from a book or from somebody talking to you, it's very hard to learn the real significance of body mapping from a book or from somebody just talking to you or showing you pictures or something like that. The difference between body mapping and simply knowing your anatomy is a very profound one.
Mm-hmm.
Body mapping is about appreciating in your own experience what your own body map is and how to correct it if it's flawed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when it's really successful, in my experience, is when somebody looks at you and says, "Oh, I wonder if you think so and so. Look, it's really like this."
Mm-hmm.
Or if, as I do in my class, you go through systematically through the body and say, "Okay, now we're going to talk about whatever you want to talk about, hips, say," and you just go through the hip and you have people sense it, and then you give them a chance to notice what they thought about it and what the truth of the matter might be.
Mm-hmm.
And the very best, when people do their best at teaching body mapping independent of the Alexander technique, they do that.
Yes, I was going to say, in my experience of teaching, I often suggest to my students that they get your book and actually work with it.
Uh-huh.
And some do and some don't. But those who do and who actually follow through and perhaps get a partner to help them locate joints on themselves and observe the difference in their movements can sometimes make pretty dramatic changes working
uh-huh.
on their own.
It can certainly happen.
Not guaranteed, and for sure, it's very helpful to have a trained observer / teacher there to facilitate the process. But
right, and then further to take it the next step,
mm-hmm.
which is to say, this is how it fits in to your more basic understanding of your own use and how your own thinking affects your movement and how, you know, and it facilitates the primary control and so on and so on.
Right. So as a way of enhancing your learning of the Alexander technique,
exactly.
in broader terms. Yeah, I would certainly agree with that.
There are certainly people who do very well with the Alexander technique who don't do body mapping.
Absolutely.
And don't
yeah.
know about body mapping and mm-hmm. haven't thought it through systematically. On the other hand, we do find that it understanding about it and using it does significantly facilitate and speed up learning the Alexander technique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
but
that's...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's my experience in teaching as well. I tend to bring in a few key body mapping concepts fairly early on in lessons, and I found that tends in general to speed up the process of learning, not for everybody,
good.
But for a great many students.
Good. I'm glad you have that experience. I certainly do. But I think there are a bunch of things that involved in Alexander that body mapping doesn't get at.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
That are extremely important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we're pretty much out of time. I just want to make sure, is there anything else that you want to say about body mapping or its relationship with the technique?
No, I don't think so right now. I would say just to encourage people to look into the How to Learn the Alexander Technique, our book, which explains it in considerable detail, and the other Andover Press books and other books that talk about it, and explore it and experiment with it. And if it doesn't make sense to you, assume that perhaps there's a flaw in the way we've explained it or something that you haven't clearly understood, and get to somebody who does know a lot about it and see if you can get your questions answered. Because most of the time when I meet like another Alexander colleague who say, oh, well, we think in the, you know, body mapping is dead wrong about this, that, or the other, it turns out that they haven't understood what it was that we were saying.
Right. And just to recap, the book in question, which is written by Bill Conable and Barbara Conable, is called How to Learn the Alexander Technique, a Manual for Students. It's available on Amazon. It's also available, I assume, from your website. Is that correct? AlexanderWorkshops.com?
I think maybe. The book is now being distributed by GIA Publications.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's available from Amazon, and I think for sure. And you could probably order it through any bookstore. And your website, I want to make sure everyone knows about, is Alexander Workshops, and that's plural, all one word, .com. AlexanderWorkshops.com. If you want to contact Bill, he'll be in Columbus through mid-year, June of 2008. And after that, he'll be in the Spokane, Washington area. And information on his teaching will be posted at that website. So that's where you can get hold of William. Well, thank you very much for being on the program. And this is, again, Robert Rickover at AlexanderAudio.com.